Good evening and welcome to a special live one-hour Senate debate between candidates Gabriel Gomez and Edward Markey. I'm Emily Rooney, along with my colleague Adam Riley. And welcome to our listeners on 89.7 WGBH and at WGBHnews.org. We're going to go to our colleague Artie Saul, who's going to be moderating the debate in just a minute. But a little excitement here in the studio, Adam Riley. Both of the candidates were late, kind of rolled in at the last minute.
Yeah, very
Gabriel Gomez just got here a few minutes ago, so it was kind of a rush.
And well, and that's sort of a welcome change because I think it's fair to say that this race has not generated as much excitement as the last U.S. Senate race we had for a variety of reasons. But maybe tonight that will change. There's still time.
A lot at stake. This is the last televised debate, as most people know. And the polls still show Ed Markey up by about 7 points, 7-11.
7 or more, yeah. So it seems like a night where Gomez really has to act.
We're going to go now to moderator R.D. Saul.
The special election for the United States Senate. Good evening, everyone. I'm R.D. Saul from Boston University's College of Communication. This is the final debate before June 25th special election to fill the Senate seat formerly held by John Kerry. We have seen the candidates on the stump, and if you've been watching television, you've certainly seen them on the air. Tonight, the Boston Media Consortium welcomes the Democratic candidate, Congressman Edward Markey, and the Republican candidate, businessman Gabriel Gomez. The goal over the next hour is a focused exchange of ideas that will give voters a chance to see where the candidates stand on some of the issues facing the Commonwealth and the nation. And we invite you to join the conversation. Join us on Twitter using hashtag MASEN, hashtag M-A-S-E-N. Our first round of questions this evening deals with the campaign and domestic issues. Here's how it works. I'll pose a question to a specific candidate. That candidate gets 45 seconds to answer, and then we'll open it up for up to 3 minutes of conversation. By coin toss, we'll begin tonight with Mr. Gomez. Welcome to both of you. Mr. Gomez, nice to see you.
Thank you.
You offer yourself as a new kind of Republican and point to your business and military experience, yet you've given voters few details about either. You're running an ad that says it's about trust. How are voters supposed to weigh you as a candidate and trust you without knowing more about your record in business and in uniform?
Thank you, Artie, and thank you everybody for watching tonight, and especially you get a chance, opportunity to address everybody a week before the election. And that, it is an issue of trust, and it's an issue of character. And I think this election is going to be about who are the people going to trust to actually put the people before party and politics. Because right now what this election is about, it's about the future. It's not about the past. It's not about old and stale ideas. It's about new and fresh ideas. And more importantly, it's about putting the people before party and politics. What we have down in D.C. right now is D.C. is broken. You've got an overburden of cynicism down there. You've got a fiscal mismanagement. And you've got an all-time high of partisan politics, which has led to complete failure down in D.C. And Congressman Markey, who I have a lot of respect for, as he spent 37 years in the Congress, you know, doing the best he can with his ideas and with his ability down there to do what's right for the people. But the reality is that who are they going to trust to put people before party and politics as opposed to party and politics before the people?
All right, I'm going to come back to the question because, frankly, you didn't answer it. I'm going to let Mr. Markey step in, and I'll come back and pose it again to you and give you an opportunity.
Thank you, R.D. Thank you to the consortium for having this very important forum. Mr. Gomez says he's running as a new kind of Republican, but it's actually the oldest, stalest Republican ideas. He says that the Wall Street reforms are too tough. I think we have to protect investors. He says that he can consider voting for a Supreme Court justice which would overturn Roe v. Wade. I would not. He says that he thinks billionaires are paying too much. I don't think that they are. I think that they have to pay their fair share. And Mr. Gomez says that he would not, in fact, support a ban on assault weapons or high-capacity magazines that turn them into weapons of war, and that he could support cutting Social Security. But on top of that, you're right, he still hasn't released who his clients were, who he worked for, as he brags about his business career. And I do believe that the people of Massachusetts have a right to know what he did in the private sector.
Let me come back to the question I asked Mr. Gomez. How are voters supposed to trust you and weigh you as a candidate without knowing more about your record in business and in the military? Help us out here.
I've been out there every single day meeting people and having the honor to meet small business owners and people, and they know that I'm a first-generation American. I'm a kid who didn't learn English until he went to school. They know that, you know, I had the honor to serve 9 years in the military and the Navy and be one of only two people to have ever become an aircraft carrier pilot and then a Navy SEAL commander. They know that I earned my way to Harvard Business School, and they know that I've earned my way to a successful career in the private sector. They know that I worked at Avid International, where, you know, we provide and we grow the retirement funds of public sector employees such as teachers, firefighters, police officers, and a lot of other investors in the world, such as President Obama. And they know that we've done a phenomenal job there. So I think the people in Massachusetts have a clear idea of what I've done in the service. They know that I've been a pilot and a SEAL. They know I've been part of one of the most elite teams in the Navy. And they know that I've worked for great companies in the private sector, and they know my record.
Back and forth, 30 seconds, Mr. Markey.
Thank you, R.D. You know, again, we're still waiting to find out who he worked for. What are the names of those clients? It's important. My vote record is completely transparent. People know every vote that I've cast over the years. But with Mr. Gomez, we still don't know who his clients were, who he worked for. And I think that's going to be important because we have to know whose side he's going to be on. The voters know which side I'm going to be on. But it's important for Mr. Gomez just to lay out his clients, who he worked for over the years. And I think that will give the voters of Massachusetts a real insight in terms of how he will actually conduct himself on the floor of the United States Senate.
Question to you, Mr. Markey, to set up our next brief conversation here. You just called Mr. Gomez a tired old Republican. Are you not a tired old Democrat after 37 years in the House of Representatives? And are you not a lockstep vote for the Democrats in the Senate?
Well, the question isn't where you're coming from. The question is where you're going. And so Mr. Gomez, he's backing these tired old Republican ideas. He brings in John McCain. He accepts financial support from Mitch McConnell. And I think that's a reflection of, in fact, who he's going to be with down in the United States Senate. So on the question of a woman's right to choose, no, I don't want to roll it back. On Wall Street reforms, yes, we need them. On ensuring the wealthy pay their fair share, absolutely. In ensuring that Social Security is not cut, I'm going to be there to fight for seniors in our state and in our country. So this is really a question of whose side you're on. Who are you going to fight? What are you going to stand up for? And I think my record is very clear. And I think in the course of this campaign, we've heard who Mr. Gomez says he's going to fight for. And I think that's ultimately what the voters want to know so they cast the correct vote on Election Day.
Mr. Gomez, have at it.
Sure. What we've seen in this campaign is probably the most egregious, cravenly misrepresentation of somebody as myself from your part, Congressman Markey. Let's just talk about your career first, and then I'll go into my career for a second. You know, you've had 37 years to lead, so let's go through your record. You know, you think that what we need to do is continue to raise taxes. Over your 37-year career, you've raised taxes almost 300 times. Matter of fact, you can't name a single time when you were asked, is there a time when you went against your party that you didn't want to raise, that you didn't vote to raise taxes? You also think that the solution to the fiscal mess we're in is to continue to borrow money into infinity. Since 1976, when you took office, the national debt was $680 billion. And now it's $17 trillion under your watch. Those are the old ideas, Congressman Markey. Now, you continue to misrepresent my point of view. So let's just be clear about where I stand on some of these points, because you spend millions of dollars from your money and outside money misrepresenting who I am. On a woman's right to choose, just like Congressman Lynch, I'm Catholic and I'm personally pro-life. However, I've said that I'm not going to change a single law down there or vote for a single law that'll take a woman's right to choose away. And you continue to put ads out there that misrepresent that. And on Wall Street, you're the one that voted for the Wall Street bailout, Congressman, not me. You're the one that voted for that the Wall Street executives can get $1 billion in bonuses. You're also the one who's recently had fundraisers by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are the main reason that we had the Wall Street failure. And on seniors, you continue to misrepresent my point on seniors. I've said from day one that if you're a senior receiving Medicare and Social Security, or if you're approaching retirement age, nothing's going to change to what you're receiving right now. And yet you continue to put out these. Now, Congressman Lynch out here before in a debate
Let
basically
me interrupt
called you a
liar.
We'll continue
with the give and take. You've had a good long stretcher. Mr. Markey, your response. We'll let this segment breathe a little bit.
Thank you. Well, again, Mr. Gomez, you said that you could consider voting for a Supreme Court justice who could overturn Roe v. Wade. Those are your words. So I'm not misrepresenting your perspective. It's what you said yourself. You say that you think the Wall Street reforms are too tough and that they have to be rolled back. And then you misrepresent my position. I have voted for $1 trillion worth of tax breaks for middle-class families over the last 15 years, even as I fight to take away tax breaks for oil companies, tax breaks from multinationals that ship jobs offshore, ensure that billionaires pay their fair share. Yes, for them, they should pay higher taxes. So for me, you know, I think it's pretty clear whose side each one of us is standing for. And you can continue to try to wiggle out of what you said in some of these preceding debates. But I think the record is very clear.
All right. Time, Mr. Markey. Let's move to a question from Mr. Gomez. The National Security Agency, the NSA surveillance programs, do they go too far? Would you vote in the Senate for limits on them?
Look, I have a unique perspective on national security. I had the honor to serve in the Navy. I was a security pilot and a Navy SEAL. And I still got a lot of friends that are out there serving on the front lines. And I think there's a fine line between, you know, our national security and our personal privacy. And what's concerning to me is that you got all these scandals down in D.C. You got the IRS. You've got the Justice Department. You've got no answers on Benghazi. And you also have an NSA, which on the surface, unless it's an imminent threat or it's a national security level at the highest level, it's gone too broad. And the problem is that people up here in Massachusetts automatically distrust D.C. And why do they trust D.C.? Because you've got career politicians that politicize everything down there. If this was a Republican president, I guarantee you that Congressman Markey, from his actions the last 37 years, would be jumping up and down, asking for massive investigations, and trying to figure out exactly what happened.
All right. To red all light of these is things on. Mr. Markey, NSA surveillance. Too much, too far, long arm of the government?
We've got to be tough on terrorism, very tough. But we can't trample on the Constitution. As the NSA and other agencies gather up information about innocent Americans, we have to make sure that there are protections that are put in place to ensure that innocent Americans don't have their privacy compromised. I'm the founder and co-chair of the Privacy Caucus in Congress. I care about privacy. But I also know that there are terrorists out there. There are criminals out there that want to hurt our country. And we have to make sure that law enforcement officials have the capacity to gain access to the information which they need in order to protect our country. And so, Mr. Snowden, I think he should be prosecuted. But at the same time, we have to have this debate about where the line is between security and privacy. And I think that is a debate that our country is now in the middle of. And I believe that we can do it in a way that protects privacy while ensuring that the law enforcement officials have the information they need to protect our country.
Is Snowden a traitor?
Mr. Snowden, by his own words, broke the law.
Is Snowden a traitor?
Mr. Snowden broke the line. He should be prosecuted fully. And if he put anybody's life in danger, he's absolutely a traitor.
Let me move on. Jobs. We're told it's a major issue for voters in Massachusetts and around the country. Our unemployment rate in the Commonwealth is below the national average, but that doesn't tell the whole story. Despite having one of the best educated workforces in the country, job creation over the last 12 years in Massachusetts has been near the bottom. You took a stab at it with Telecom City. In reaction to the stories that have appeared over the last couple of days, you blame a lot of people for that, Mr. Markey. Do you bear any blame for that not producing 7,500 jobs?
Well, the three mayors, Malden, Medford, and Everett, banded together to take 200 acres, polluted acres, acres that weren't really producing jobs. They gave up their sovereignty, and right now there are three times more jobs that are there than before we began the project. Four times as much tax revenue coming in to those three cities. But moreover, that was a partnership with Bill Weld and Paul Cellucci and Jane Swift and Governor Romney and Patrick. So it was mostly state money.
But you
and
were in it. It was
absolutely. But there were two recessions that occurred during that time. And moreover, We now have a biotech firm there. We have the regional headquarters for Marriott. We have the Tufts Boathouse. We have a huge residential project, and more is coming. So all of those mayors now have three times more jobs and four times more tax revenue going to those cities than before this project began.
Mr. Gomez.
I think this is a great example of somebody who's never had private sector experience, who's never had a job up here in Massachusetts, analyzing an opportunity and not realizing that it wasn't going to create what he said it was going to create. There hasn't been a single job for the Internet created out of that project that you claimed that was going to be created. Now, you stand up here and you give all these great answers and you say that you're going to be doing X and Y, but the reality is, sir, you've had 37 years down in the Congress to get something done. We still don't have immigration reform done, and you've had 37 years to do that. We still don't have a comprehensive tax reform done, and you've had 37 years to do that. We could have reformed Social Security and Medicare, and you've had 37 years to do that. What makes you think that over the next 17 months or the next 37 years, you're going to be able to do something that you haven't done in 37 years? So you can continue to tell the people of Massachusetts that you would have done this, this, and that. But the reality is, sir, you've had 37 years down in D.C. to get these important things done. What I'm asking is the
following.
Very
quickly.
No, I'm just saying. I'm asking the
following. Try and keep this moving.
Give me 17 months, and I will keep my word, and I will do what I say. I don't need 37 years to do this.
Again, Mr. Gomez keeps mentioning his private sector experience. You've asked him who were his clients, how many jobs were created. He's running as a businessman, and you asked him the question, and he did not answer it. We need to know, Mr. Gomez, who you work for, what kind of jobs were created, and we still haven't received that answer. The mayors of these three cities would not go backwards on this project.
Mr.
They are
Gomez.
Glad for the jobs that have been created.
If Congressman Markey wants to compare resumes, I'm more than happy to do that, Congressman. And if you knew what private equity was, you'd know that we don't have clients. It's that simple. We have investors, and I've told you who those investors are. They're public service employees. Hundreds of thousands of them right here in Massachusetts, firefighters, police officers, teachers. And even President Obama is an investor at Avenue International, Congressman. That's who our investors are. We don't have clients. So if you want to compare resumes, let's compare resumes head-to-head. I'll compare my last 37 years. I'll compare my military record to yours. I'm more than happy to compare my last 16 years in the private sector on exactly who's created value and who's created jobs that compare to you, sir.
Well, then
and I'll tell you one thing, sir. President Obama would not be an investor in Avenue International if we had racked up $17 trillion in debt.
Again, we still don't know what Mr. Gomez did at Avenue. We still don't know which clients specifically he worked for. We still don't know which results he specifically got for any of these people who he has just mentioned. He still has refused to make his own private sector record public so that we can determine whether or not all those things you just said are, in fact, true.
Artie, this is exactly... He's mirroring exactly what his ads are, and they're misrepresenting, because you don't understand. We don't have clients, Congressman Markey. I don't know how many times I got to tell you that we don't have clients. We have investors, and we have done phenomenally well for our investors. President Obama wouldn't be an investor in our fund if we weren't one of the best investors in private equity in the whole country over the last 10 years. Now, if you want to name some companies, sure, Lululemon. You go out there and ask anybody out there in the state of Massachusetts, where they go shopping, how many stores we've actually created open since we invested in that company. We made a Canadian company into an American company, Congressman. We went from less than a dozen stores here to over 200 stores. That's thousands of jobs there, Congressman.
Right. I think we've worked this over. We've got 4 minutes left in this segment. I want to even out questions to make sure you each get one more. So let's keep the answer short. Mr. Gomez, on affirmative action, the Supreme Court is about to rule on an important affirmative action case. And there's a debate in the United States over whether affirmative action should be race-based or economic-based. Do we need affirmative action? And if so, should it be race or economic-based? Short answer, please.
Sure. I think that everybody should have the equal opportunity to achieve the American dream. That's why I'm running. I'm a kid who didn't learn English until he went to school. And I think that if we continue down the path that we're on, under Congressman Markey's path, not everyone's going to have a chance in the American dream. And I think the people that are not socially, demographically, at their disadvantage should have a chance. And I think that we need to do is make sure that they've got a chance. And if that entails giving them an extra benefit, then yes, I think we should give them that chance, because there are people right now that are in schools that are failing, and they shouldn't be destined to failure. And I think that there are a lot of kids out there, a lot of people out there that don't have the opportunities that other people have. And if we continue down this path, that Congress Markey wants to continue down this path, they're not going to have those opportunities irrespective of whether we have affirmative action or not.
Mr. Markey, affirmative action, do we need it?
I don't think we've reached the day yet where we can say that race does not play a role in whether or not people are able to advance, that the language of the country that they came from does not play a role in how far they can advance in our society. We haven't reached that day yet. That's a day that we should aspire to. These people, their accents may be different, but their aspirations are the same. And they're working very, very hard. But to say that race is not a factor, I just don't agree with that. Right. I think we have to keep affirmative action there so that we ensure that we do give protections to those racial groups that do, in fact, need a little bit of help so that they can maximize their God-given abilities.
All right. You've had three topic areas. The third topic area for you, Mr. Markey, taxes. You released 8 years of tax returns that show an effective tax rate of less than 20%. That's not much different than Mr. Gomez's 21% rate over 6 years. Typical rate for somebody in your category would be about 30%. You have criticized Mr. Gomez for not paying his fair share. Have you paid your fair share?
I have paid my fair share. Most of the reason that my taxes are low, just the mortgage deduction. That's the way in which my rate goes down. In fact, Mr. Gomez says that he'd put the mortgage interest deduction on the table to be cut. And I think that that is just a huge mistake. Millions of Americans, about 1.3 million here in Massachusetts alone, benefit from the mortgage interest deduction. That's the way that most Americans are able to afford a home, are able to protect their family, are able to move up a rung in our society. And I disagree with Mr. Gomez in his willingness to consider repealing or, in fact, reducing the mortgage interest deduction for homeowners in our state and our country.
All right. Short answer, please.
Sure.
Response?
I'm sorry, but this is about as high to hypocrisy. If you think that you're paying your fair share and you've got a lower rate than your assistant, but you want people that make more money than you to pay a lower, you know, higher rate than your assistant congressman. You should, if you really do believe in the Buffett rule, then you should be willing to pay a higher rate than your assistant. And it sounds like you think you've paid a fair rate. You don't believe you need to pay a lower rate than or a higher rate than your assistant congressman. I think we should have a fair tax system out there. I think the more you make, the more you should have to pay. But I also think that we need to have a comprehensive tax reform. I think we need to reform the corporate tax rate. We also need to reform the personal tax rate. Close all the loopholes, congressman. I say you put everything in there. Put the carried interest on the personal. Put everything in there on the corporate. Put the oil subsidies, the oil breaks, the corporate jets, the Hollywood tax breaks. Put everything in there, congressman. And then what we do is we take the best ideas from both sides.
Quickly, Mr. Gomez.
And obviously I would have the mortgage tax deduction at the very bottom. But I go in there with an open mind, congressman, knowing that the way to have a negotiation, and this is what you do in the private sector, and this
time,
is how
Mr.
things
Gomez,
get done.
Please.
The mortgage interest deduction would not be on the table for me. It's on the table for Mr. Gomez. I would not cut the mortgage interest deduction. Mr. Gomez makes 10 times more than I make per year, and he paid pretty much the same tax rate. So we do need tax reform. We have to make sure that those who are in that wealthiest category do pay their fair share.
I have to ask a follow-up here, Mr. Markey. On your tax returns, your home address is redacted, blacked out. We can understand why you would not want your street address, perhaps. But can you tell us tonight what state is listed? Is it Massachusetts?
Oh, it is Massachusetts. That was just the accountant who made a mistake. But it's 7 Townsend Street in Malden. I have lived in the same house for 64 years. So it says 7 Townsend Street in Malden. It's been my lifelong residence, and it will be for as long as I live. So make no question about that.
All right.
It is, in fact, Malden, Massachusetts.
Let's call that the end of round one. Thank you both. Round two of this evening's conversation gives the candidates a chance to question each other. 45 seconds, 30 seconds for a question, 45 seconds for the other candidate to respond, and up to 2 minutes of discussion. We will begin this round with a question from Mr. Gomez to Mr. Markey.
Sure. Congressman, you've been down there for 37 years, and you continue to believe that we need to keep taxing everybody. And over the 37 years, you voted to raise taxes almost 300 times. Can you name a time when you've gone against your party and not voted to raise taxes?
Thank you for that question. And my answer is quite simple, that I have voted to reduce taxes on middle-class residents of our state and our country by $1 trillion. $8 over the last 15 years. And I have voted to increase taxes on oil companies, multinationals that ship jobs overseas, on billionaires. The point is we have to keep the tax system fair. That is what I have tried to do throughout my entire career. And I have done so in a way that ensures that we don't allow for huge tax breaks to be put on the books that then result on tremendous pressure being put on Medicare, on Medicaid, on education programs that then Republicans with a chorus say must be cut because of the revenues which have been drained out of our economy. So, no, I did not vote for those Republican tax breaks that were going to the rich and the oil companies and the multinationals because our country could not afford them.
All right.
So just to be clear, in 37 years...
This has to be very fast.
Okay, just to be
trying
clear,
to
so
equalize
in 37
time
years,
and questions here,
you
Mr.
couldn't
Gomes.
Find one time to go against your party to not vote for raise taxes. But you have voted to raise taxes, you know, on the medical device companies here in Massachusetts. And you have voted to raise taxes on the senior citizens on their Social Security benefits.
All right. Quick comeback.
Mr. Gomes is the one who says that he can support chain CPI. Chain CPI is to Social Security what a chainsaw is to a tree. He says he can support that right now on Social Security. And on the issue of who stands where on these tax cuts, Mr. Gomes is the one who says that he would not consider raising taxes on billionaires. That's all you have to know because it's the programs for the people that then have to be cut because billionaires are not paying their fair share.
And that is once
point
again.
Made. Point absol- made.
We need once again. It's
we're
an absolute
trying to equalize time here, Mr. Gomes, okay. And make sure that you each get two sure. questions to each other in this segment. Mr. Markey to Mr. Gomes.
Mr. Gomes, you oppose a ban on assault weapons. You oppose a ban on high capacity magazines that attach to those weapons that turn them into weapons of war. Those assault weapons could have upwards of 100 bullets in them that could be shot within a 2-minute period. Where would a civilian need a weapon where they could shoot a gun with 100 bullets in it in under 2 minutes?
Congressman, you know that here in Massachusetts, we have a ban on assault weapons. And I respect that. And I think that's fine. We have a ban on assault weapons. But you also know that you've been completely misrepresenting my view on gun control. You continue to have these ads out there. I support expanded background checks, Congressman. I'm the one that's gone against the NRA, and I'm ashamed that there's only 4 Republicans out there that voted for this expanded background check bill at Toomey Manchin. And we both know that only one of us here can go down to D.C. and actually get this bill passed when we get down there, because it's going to take bipartisan work to get the Republicans on board and to get the conservative Democrats on board. And yet, you continue to try to scare, and you're also the only person here who is craven enough, the only political candidate to actually use the Newtown Massacre for political gain. That says it right there. You'll do anything and say anything to get elected, Congressman. That's what you've been doing for 37 years, sir.
Mr. Gomes, you haven't answered the question. Where would a civilian need a weapon that you could shoot 100 bullets in just 2 minutes? You say you support background checks. Well, that's a conservative Democrat from West Virginia and a conservative Republican from Pennsylvania who have that bill. We're from Massachusetts. We're not the laggards. We're the leaders on assault weapon bans. And we want one for the whole country because they can come down from New Hampshire or from other states into Massachusetts. So where, tell the voters, where could a gun like that be used by a civilian that could shoot 100 bullets in under 2 minutes?
Mr. Gomes.
Sure. Once again, Congressman, you know, you take an issue that is emotional and divisive, and you know that we should be focusing on what I want to ban all weapons from the wrong people. And you know that's the way to actually solve the problem and make our schools, our communities, and our kids safer, Congressman. But yet, you want to be craven enough to go out there and use the Newtown Massacre for political gain. And you understand that there's only one way we're going to make our schools, our communities, and our kids safer, and that's to pass the expanded background check and tie it to mental illness and to go down there. And you know that we're going to need to get more Republicans and more Democrats on board. And only one of us is actually bipartisan by experience to actually go down there and work across the aisle and get both sides to get them together. And that's how we're going to make our community safer, Congressman. If you go down there, Congressman, nothing changes. It's going to be the exact same vote.
All right.
And we're not going to have expanded background checks.
No,
and our communities,
I want to make sure you each get one more question here.
We'll still be at risk.
Mr. Gomes to Mr. Markey.
Sure. Congressman, you've been down there for 37 years. And, I mean, the president's got term limits. Don't you believe that congressmen and senators should be term limited?
Mr. Gomes, you just had John McCain in campaigning for you 3 weeks ago. Did you ask John McCain to leave the Senate? You have Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, the Republican leader in the Senate, raising money for you across the country. Did you ask Mitch McConnell to tell him that it's time for him to leave the Senate as part of your ability to get support from them to help you in this campaign? No, Mr. Gomez, you did not.
Yes, I did.
No, you did not. You did not tell John McCain that you don't think he belongs in the Senate anymore as you were praising him at that press conference. That
I did,
just
actually,
did not
happen.
So from my perspective, this just becomes a question of whether or not you understand what's going on. Because we're both running for the Senate for the first time. We're both going down there for the first time to the United States Senate, whichever one of us wins. So the only issue should really be, what are we going to be doing in the United States Senate in order to advance the interests of the people of Massachusetts?
Mr. Gomez.
Well, you didn't answer the question. And just to be frank, I did tell Senator John McCain that he should be term limited. And you wish that you were running against Mitch McConnell or Newt Gingrich or even Gerald Ford, who was president when you first got down there, Congressman. But the reality is you're running against me, a new kind of Republican, a first-generation American, one who's not afraid to tell his party when they're wrong. They're wrong on immigration right now. They're wrong on gay marriage right now. They're wrong on the expanded background checks right now. They're wrong on the environment, on global warming right now. I'm on the right side of that, and I've told my party they're wrong. And what I'm going to do when I go down to D.C., Congressman, which is going to be different than you, sir, is I'm going to go down there, and I'm going to try to make my party better, and I'm going to look across the aisle, and I'm going to work with the Democrats as well. Because there's more Democrats than Republicans. And the only way we're going to get this country working and moving forward again is if we have somebody down there who's going to respect the other side and work together. Because I'll say one thing. Nothing's going to change if Mr. Markey wins this election. We're going to have the same D.C. down there, and we're going to have the same dysfunction. All we're going to have is you're going to move your office from one building to the next.
Mr. Gomez did not tell John McCain, this should be your last term. You should just be leaving right now as he came. That never happened. That conversation did not happen. I think everyone here knows he did not tell McCain right now he should be finishing his career at the end of this term.
Mr. Gomez just said it happened. Okay, are you calling him a liar?
I'm saying that did not happen. But I'll say this. Let me go further on this, okay? He says that he's a new kind of Republican. He's going to go down there and change business as usual. Well, the Republican Party supports taking away a woman's right to choose. Mr. Gomez says he could vote for a Supreme Court justice that would do that. The Republican Party wants to reduce Wall Street reforms. Mr. Gomez wants to do that. Republican Party does not want to tax the wealthy any further. Mr. Gomez does not want to do this. So that's not a new Republican. That is an old-fashioned Republican with the stalest, oldest Republican ideas.
We've covered that territory very quickly. Did that conversation happen or didn't
it? Absolutely did happen. So if you want to call me a liar, that's fine, Congressman Markey, because that's effectively what you've been doing with all these TV ads. You know, I know Congressman Lynch was up here before, and he called you a liar, and I think you were only lying a little bit back then.
Mr. Lynch isn't running tonight.
So.
We need to move on.
Sorry,
Mr.
Sir.
Question, Mr. Markey to Mr. Gomez.
Thank you. The Boston Globe had a big story. It said that Mr. Gomez was on the board of directors of two companies, including one which was in Peabody, Massachusetts, which laid off people and then sent those jobs overseas, and that then federal assistance had to come in to help those workers. So my question to Mr. Gomez is this. Were those the only two companies that he served on their board? And wasn't there a way to keep the jobs here in Peabody, Massachusetts?
Congressman, this is another example of, you know, somebody having private sector experience and actually doing something here in Massachusetts, sir. But, you know, that company that you mentioned, the one in Peabody, Synventive, it serviced the automotive industry. And during that time, the automotive industry here in the United States was going through a depression in the cycle. And there was a lot of growth over in the Far East. So that's obviously where the operations grew. But if you look at it today, now that the economic cycle's turned around and the automotive industry has rebounded, it's doing a lot better here in Peabody. And if we would have done what we did, that company wouldn't be around today, sir, which is in our state of Massachusetts. So we preserved the jobs. We grew the retirement funds of the police officers, the firefighters, and the teachers. Hundreds of thousands of them right here in Massachusetts, Congressman. And also for President Obama. So you should ask President Obama. He was here last week with you. If he was happy with what we've done over at Avenue International. And like I said, I think that if we had accumulated $17 trillion in debt, Congressman, I don't think he'd be an investor. Now, I know that, and I'm just going to put yours in your own mouth. You know, this isn't math, sir. It's arithmetic.
Mr. Markey.
Sure. You know, the Boston Globe, a couple of reporters were just chasing Mr. Gomez last week to try to get the answers to these questions. And he just slammed the door on them in his car, not answering the questions from the Boston Globe. But you can't slam the door on the voters of Massachusetts, not giving them the answers. You know, everyone knows this business plan, this 3x5 card, that just says, lay off people here, ship the jobs overseas, and then have the federal government pick up the tab for those people who are left behind in Peabody. Everyone knows that business plan. And so the real question here is, what other companies, what other board of directors did Mr. Gomez serve on? Were there other jobs that he shipped overseas? And wasn't there a way to keep those jobs here in Peabody? Because many companies fight very hard to keep jobs here in America.
We've got 30 seconds left in this segment.
Especially since it was the federal taxpayer who ultimately then had to help those workers.
Mr. Gomez. You should have asked President Obama what he thinks about Avenue International Congressman. And I've served on the board of Synventive. I've served on the board of Keystone. Served on the board of American Radiology Service. Served on the board of Kirkland's. All these companies have done phenomenally well. And we've done well for the public sector employees here. Now, if you want to talk about job shipping to China, sir, Evergreen Solar, a company that you use taxpayer dollars to fund after the stimulus
this
bill,
segment,
shut
this segment
down
is up.
And shipped 800 jobs overseas to China. A123 Systems, Congressman. Another company that you funded.
You've got to have a quick response to this.
Evergreen,
opened up another
Evergreen
topic here.
Was a company funded by state money, not by federal money. Okay, so on that, Mr. Gomez is just wrong.
All right, we need to end here. You each got two questions to each other. We're running about equal on time. For round three, we go back to the original format, my questions, as the springboard for a conversation. Our focus in this section is defense and foreign policy, and we'll begin this round with Mr. Markey. Syria is the topic, Mr. Markey. The UN now says the Syrian civil war has cost more than 90,000 lives. The U.S. has concluded that Assad used chemical weapons. The U.S. is now sending small arms and ammunition, basing planes in Jordan. How do we know we're sending guns to the right people, and are we on a slippery slope in Syria?
That's a great question. We have to be very careful. As we enter into this Syrian thicket, we have to make sure that there has been a very careful vetting of any insurgent group that the United States starts to help. We want to back democratically oriented groups within that country. We don't want to help those elements that might come back to haunt us, both in that country and around the world. So from my perspective, under no circumstances should American troops be on the ground in Syria. That would be an historic mistake. If there is going to be a no-fly zone, it has to be totally in concert with all of our allies. The United States should not be acting unilaterally. And with regard to these small arms, we just have to make sure they don't come back to haunt us the way our support for the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the 1980s came back to haunt us as the Taliban in the 21st century.
Syria, Mr. Gomez.
Sure. Yeah. Syria is a critical part of the Middle East right now. They're Iran's last ally. And Iran is the biggest threat to the Middle East. It's acquiring capability for nuclear weapons. It's the biggest sponsor of terrorism around the world. And what we need to do right now, we need to make sure that we align ourselves with the rebel group that is going to best promote democracy and peace in the Middle East. Because that's going to isolate Iran. Because right now you've got Syria receiving fighter planes from Russia. You've got Syria receiving men, armament, intelligence from Iran. And what we need to do is make sure that Assad falls. And I think that we should be providing arms and humanitarian aid to the rebel group that is going to best promote peace and democracy in the Middle East. I think that the last thing we would ever do is put troops on the ground. I know that from firsthand, and I've got a lot of friends out there. I've got a unique perspective on making sure that we don't commit troops carelessly. But I do think we need to have a no-fly zone, and I think we need to have as many coalition partners as possible. Ideally, we'd be with the UN, but that may not be realistic. But we need to make sure that we try to have as many partners as possible. But we can't have the rebel group not armed with the capability to fight back against Assad. Because otherwise, they're just going to be left to slaughter.
You brought up Iran. There's a new elected leader in Iran, said to be a moderate, said to be open to discussion. Do you believe it? A new day?
Well, you know, I've read about him, and he's obviously come out and said the right things. So, but just like President Reagan said, you know, it's best to test. I mean, you know, trust and then verify. So we'll see what he comes out with. But I would be skeptical. You know, we have not had good relations with Iran since 1979, obviously, and their mission is to annihilate Israel. And so you need to take it with a grain of salt, but I'll let him, you know,
speak the new Iranian for a while. Leader?
Well, they say he's a moderate, but that's in an Iranian context. And we always have to remember that it's the Ayatollahs that run the country. And so what kind of discretion, what kind of autonomy this new leader might have, that still remains to be seen. But we should be very skeptical. We have to continue to tell Iran we're not going to allow them to have a nuclear weapons program. We don't want them helping Syria. We don't want them helping Hezbollah, destabilizing Israel. We have to continue to put the pressure on, but we should be talking to them just to make sure they know that we're serious and that if they ended their nuclear weapons program and their other weapons support into the region, that there could be a basis for an agreement to be reached.
All right. Mr. Gomez, sure. 48,000 Americans have been killed or wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's killed and wounded. The U.S. has spent trillions of dollars on these two wars. Has the sacrifice in lives and treasure been worth it?
Look, I don't think this should be made into a political question. You know, I've had a lot of friends that went over there and fought. Some of them got killed. A lot of them got injured. And I think the last thing we need to do is make a political issue here. You know, we went into Iraq with the intelligence that we had back then. It's easy to Monday morning quarterback. But with the intelligence that we had back then, Senator Kerry, Senator Clinton, they were all for it initially. So to turn this into a political question afterwards, I think it's just the wrong thing to do. I think it desecrates the effort and the sacrifice that our men and women made over there in Iraq. And so given the intelligence that we had back then, it was the right thing to do. But it's easy to Monday morning quarterback.
Mr. Markey.
Yeah, we know that the war in Iraq was now premised upon a lie. Dick Cheney knew that there was no nuclear weapons program in Iraq. That was the premise for going in, and they knew that there was no nuclear weapons program. Now, with regard to whether or not it was worth it, well, I think it's going to take years to know that. We can already see great destabilization in Iraq. We can already see a huge Sunni-Shiite friction exposed, and hopefully they can work in a way that does have true democratic involvement for all elements, including the Kurds, in a unified government. That remains to be seen. There has been an announcement that the Taliban is now going to be negotiating with the government in Afghanistan. We still don't know how that is going to turn out, whether or not these will become places of real stability or just the middle of a civil war that had an American involvement for a brief period of time in their long histories. But that still is history yet to be written.
A follow-up question. What have we learned from Iraq and Afghanistan?
I think that we've learned is that every country out there and every culture has different histories, and they're different than the Americans, and so they've got a different view and different beliefs on what democracy is. And I think we've learned that we can't instill our exact idea of what democracy is. No one's going to align 100% with us. Now, where I think the administration has gone wrong on the Middle East is that, you know, I believe that we should have pulled out of Iraq, and I believe that we should be pulling out of Afghanistan. But what I don't agree with is that we've set a timetable and that you've effectively shown your hands to the Taliban and to the other groups within Afghanistan. That is the worst thing you can do. I know that I believe that we should be pulling out, but you don't televise and telegraph our intentions. It only makes it, they're just going to hold out, and it's going to turn back into the area of instability that it was before.
Point made. I'm trying to equalize time. What have we learned?
Well, we've learned how hard it is to impose any kind of democracy upon any country. They're going to make their own determinations. And I think that lesson should be learned by us, especially with regard to sending ground troops into Syria. I will repeat that. But from my perspective, we now have to make sure that we do pull out of Afghanistan. We do have to make sure that we then take care of all the veterans who have come home. There are many of them who are still not being served well by our medical system, by our job retraining programs, by the kind of care which we owe to those veterans. So, no, I think we should be out of Afghanistan, and I think we should meet the timetable that was agreed to between the Afghan government and the United States. It's time for them to figure out a way of making their own country work.
All right. To you, Mr. Markey. China is apparently conducting cyber espionage against the United States. A report says there's actually a special cyber espionage unit that has stolen details of some key weapon systems. What should we do about it, and have the revelations about the NSA surveillance undercut the U.S. bargaining position?
Yeah, China and their army are trying to penetrate our American industry and military on an ongoing basis. I passed through the House of Representatives a key bill just 3 years ago to harden the electricity grid of our country against a cyber attack from China, because I was told by top NSA and other intelligence officials that they were probing our electric grid and it could be catastrophic in our country. The same thing is now happening with the Chinese stealing intellectual property in our country. They are now taking what it is that is developed by the creative community in our country, and they are, in fact, making those products on their soil with labor which is not paid what American labor would be paid. And similarly, we have to make sure that they don't steal our military secrets, our nuclear secrets. That's a big advantage which we have over every other country in the world. China is at the top of the list of those that would seek to use cyber capacity to compromise the security of our private sector and of our military.
China and cybersecurity.
Cybersecurity is going to be the biggest threat that we're going to have other than an actually armed conflict going forward in this world. And that's why the military has now established a cyber command. And China is the biggest perpetrator of cyber warfare. They've gone out there and they're penetrating our military installations, they're penetrating our businesses, and they're penetrating our commerce. And they're stealing a lot of our secrets here. And from our perspective is that we need to have even more funding going into our cyber warfare, you know, and then into the Department of Homeland Security as well. You know, Congressman Markey here, you know, he says he's tough on national security, but he doesn't like it when I talk about his national security record. You know, he's the one that voted to not even fund the Department of Homeland Security. He's the one that, which is obviously a big part of component of keeping our homeland here secure here. Now, I obviously think that China is the one that we need to focus on, but we need all this focus on the rest of the world because China isn't the only one out there that's got cyber warfare capabilities. You've got Eastern Europe and you've got Russia as well, so it's not just China.
All right. The Homeland Security first, and then I want to come back to the question. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Gomez keeps saying that I did not vote for the Department of Homeland Security, and I keep telling him that I did not vote for it because that bill was going to take away the right of the first responders who work for the Department of Homeland Security to negotiate for the health care benefits, for the wage benefits, for the employees of the Department of Homeland Security. If they're going to be running into buildings to protect us, if they're going to be heading towards bombs, they should have a right to negotiate for their own families to protect their own families. And with regard to other Homeland Security issues, just last week, I worked with Michael Grimm, Republican from New York, to pass an amendment to ensure that knives are not put back on passenger planes, and that passed on the floor of the House. And with regard to China, yeah, I'm the one who passed the bill through the House of Representatives. It was blocked by Republicans in the Senate to ensure that our electricity grid in our country was, in fact, hardened against a cyber attack from the Chinese on our country.
Understood. That's in the rearview mirror. Let's look through the windshield for a moment. What do we do about what China is doing? What's the policy?
Our policy has to be that we put this at the top of our negotiating list with the Chinese.
Do we have any leverage given the NSA revelations?
We have a lot of leverage. We have military leverage. We have economic leverage over the Chinese. They need our help. They need assistance. They need partnerships as they go forward in the years ahead. And we just have to make sure that we begin negotiating tougher with the Chinese to extract from them protections for the American economy, for the American security that are right now being compromised by the Chinese.
It obviously needs to be at the top of the priority list, but it's been made harder by Congressman Markey because China owns more debt of the U.S. than any other country out there. And the fact that we've grown the debt from $680 billion under Congressman Markey to $17 trillion enabled China to basically own more than half the United States makes it a hard negotiation to go with China. So I think, obviously, one of the ways you have to do is we need to reduce that debt so China has less leverage on how we negotiate with them. But if we continue down the path of Congressman Markey, China's going to continue to remain and have an upper hand at this point right now.
The
budget was balanced by Bill Clinton in 2001. But George Bush and the Republicans took over. Two huge tax cuts, two wars that were not paid for, and a casino was set up on Wall Street with stock options, derivatives, credit default swaps that then led to a collapse of our economy and a huge increase in our federal deficit.
Mr. Gomez wants to take us back to those very same policies.
Where I come from the military, you either lead or you get out of the way. You've had 37 years, Congressman, to take this debt. What you've done is you've taken it from almost $700 billion to $17 trillion. Now, you want to keep blaming somebody else? That's no accountability. And that's why people are tired of D.C. In the military, you either lead or you get out of the way. You get things done or you let somebody else go in there and do it for them, sir. And you can't sit up here and say, well, it's somebody else's fault. You've had a chance to lead for 37 years, Congressman. And the fact is, you haven't led. You've just shown an example that you're blaming other people. People don't want to be blamed. You know, they don't want you to come up here and start blaming other people. They want you to take accountability for what's happened during your regular 37 years.
Point made. Cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare, cutting programs for ordinary families is not the way to make up for the Bush administration.
Drones is the topic. The president has promised tighter controls and rules on drone strikes with decision-making at the highest levels of government now. What are your rules for drone strikes?
Look, I think overseas, the president's going to have more discretion. I think that if somebody switches sides, they're absolutely targets for drones. And I think the president has done a good job of targeting those people overseas. I think within the United States, here internally, I'd be very hesitant. And I'd be very, very cautious about even using drones to target U.S. citizens here. I think that Rand Paul made a great point when he did the filibuster a few months ago. And as a result, he got the president to disclose more of what his intentions were in respect to drones within the United States here. But as I said, overseas, absolutely. If you've changed sides, if you're an American, you're a viable target.
Drone strikes, what are the limits?
Drone strikes overseas, we have to make sure that our national interest is at stake, that we have no other way of apprehending the individual except killing them with a drone strike. And here domestically, there are going to be 20,000 drones that are licensed over the next 10 years here within our own country. And we have to make sure that as those drones take off, that they are accompanied by privacy protections for every American, because that could be the spy in the sky on Americans here domestically as well.
We have 2 minutes left in this segment. Go ahead.
No, Sam, see, obviously there's a rapid advancement on technology on drones, and you've got more and more law enforcement agencies using drones within the United States here. And just like anything else, you've got to be careful about exactly what they're eventually going to be used for. And the NSA is a good example of just how overbearing, overreaching this government can be. So I'd be very hesitant for the use of drones within the United States here.
1 minute left. Mr. Markey, any further comment on drones?
On drones?
On privacy?
As new technologies are deployed, we have to make sure that we accompany those new technologies with human values. They must be animated by what America believes technologies should, in fact, do for our society. By themselves, these technologies have no values. So that's why we need the debate in our country on drones, on domestic spying, so that we have ensured that the privacy of Americans, that the values of Americans are protected, even as we welcome new technologies into the mix.
All right, we'll leave it at that. And that will end our three rounds of questions and answers. We'll end this evening with time we've reserved for each candidate to make a closing statement. 1 minute by each. That's by a coin toss. And Mr. Gomez, you are first with a closing statement tonight.
Sure. Thank you, Artie. I'm running because I want to serve. I had the honor to serve my country as a Navy pilot, an aircraft carrier pilot, and Navy SEAL. I've got four young kids. And I want to make sure that my kids and everybody else's kids have a chance at the American dream. If we continue down the path that we've had for the last 37 years, our kids are not going to have a chance to achieve their dream. I believe this election is about the future. It's not about the past. I believe it's about fresh and new ideas, not old and stale ideas. And I believe that we need to start putting the people before party and politics. Because right now, our country is much better than its politics. And I want to go down there and make our Congress as good as the American people. Each generation should pass off a better America than what it started for. I think 37 years is enough time. I ask you to give me 17 months and see if I've kept my word. And if I have, then you can reelect me. And if I haven't, then vote me out. But I think that Congressman Markey's had 37 years to prove something and to lead down there. And look what we've got down in D.C. We've got dysfunction, we've got failure, and discord.
1 minute, Mr. Markey.
Thank you. Mr. Gomez is running on the stalest old Republican ideas. That's what differentiates us. He opposes an assault weapons ban. He opposes a ban on high-capacity magazines. He says that he can vote for a Supreme Court justice, which would overturn Roe v. Wade. He says that he believes the wealthy are paying too much, but we know that puts tremendous pressure on all the social programs that then have to be cut in order to protect the wealthy. He says that the Wall Street reforms are too tough, but we know what happens when Wall Street does not have a cop on the beat. Mr. Gomez says that he could cut Social Security for seniors in our country. I don't think that we should be doing that. I want to run for the United States Senate in order to make sure that the 21st century is more educated, more healthy, more prosperous, and more fair than the 20th century was. I think every family and every child in every family should be able to maximize all of their God-given abilities. I'm going to go down to Washington to protect a more fair society, to ensure that every American, regardless of income or race, can maximize all of their human ability.
Thank you, Edward Markey and Gabriel Gomez. That's it, the final debate. A reminder, Election Day 1 week away, June 25th. Your vote counts. Turn out. We'll be counting them for you on our stations around the Boston Media Consortium. I'm R.D. Saul. Good night.